Hello again, friends, and welcome to another hour of joyous entertainment as we visit Christmas's past during the Golden Age of Radio. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I invite you to celebrate the holidays with me around the old part of radio. Today is the last Christmas program of 2019, and I've selected two less traditional Christmas episodes to wrap up this wonderful holiday season. Let's start with The Shadow, a hugely popular series that ran from July 31, 1930 until Boxing Day 1954, beginning on CBS and ending on Mutual after a short stint on NBC. The Shadow is arguably one of the most popular American old-time radio series. It's usually the first series people think of when I mention the phrase old radio plays to them. Today's episode is titled When the Stockings Were Hung and was first heard at 5:30 p.m. on Sunday, December 24, 1939 on the Mutual Radio Network. The episode stars Bill Johnson as Lamont Cranston, a.k.a. The Shadow, and Marjorie Anderson as Margot Lane, Cranston's female companion. Enjoy.
Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. The Shadow uses his hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the unseen voice of the Shadow belongs. Today's story, The Stockings Were Hung. This is a story of Christmas time in a great city. Tonight, with Margot Lane and Lamont Cranston, we look in on the lives of the Grover family.
Get out of here. Get out. You'll not get a cent of pay from me, Mr. Grover.
Simon Jordan, you know my wife's dead and I have two children. And it's Christmas. I've got
to. Get out before I...
It's Christmas time in a great city. As our scene opens, we find Margot and Lamont coming down on the elevator from Margot's apartment.
Well, here's where we get out, Margot. Where now?
Over to the club, Lamont, to pick up a Christmas basket of food to deliver.
Good.
Oh, look, Lamont, it's snowing.
What do you think of that?
I want to stop the corner and see my friend Spike.
Spike?
Yes, Spike Grover. He's a newsboy. I always find my papers for him. There's Spike on the corner.
Busy little man, isn't he?
I always give him $5 for Christmas.
In spite of all you've said about organized charity, giving one isolated newsboy $5.
Oh, but Lamont, this is different. Get your papers. I should say it is different. It isn't even Spike.
Paper, mister, paper.
Yes, the young lady would like a paper to cover her new hat. If you can call that Christmas tree ornament a hat.
Where's Spike Grover?
Spike's got family trouble. He's a pal of mine, Spike is. Tells me everything. He knows I can keep a secret.
Family trouble?
Well, it's very confidential. You see, Spike and his sister, Jane, you see, they haven't got any mother. They only got a father. And you see, I don't tell anybody, but Spike's grandfather owned the Grover Importing Company.
Wait a minute. You're way ahead of me.
Now, look. Spike's grandfather owned the Grover Importing business, and Spike's name is Grover. So Spike and his father should own the Grover Importing business. And, well, it seems there's a fellow named Jordan worked for Spike's grandfather. And the way I figure it, this fellow Jordan put the snatch on the whole business.
Did what?
Lady, you wouldn't understand. I was just telling this gentleman here, as far as I can figure, this old miser named Jordan steals the whole business right out from under Spike's father's nose. So a couple of days ago, Jordan fired Spike's father from his own business, mind you. Ain't that awful?
But where is Spike?
And where's his father?
Lady, if I knew that, I'd tell Spike.
Well, where does he live?
He lives in the old house down on South and 7th Street.
What's your name, son?
They call me Gabby. But, you know, I could never figure out why.
No? Well, Gabby, here's a Christmas present for you.
Oh, thanks. Gee, thanks, mister.
Merry Christmas, Gabby.
And the same to you, lady.
Bye. Well, you go over to your club and pick up the Christmas basket, Margot. I think I'll go down and see Spike and family. I'll pick you up at the club, Margot. A cab.
You want a cab, mister? You want a cab?
Yes. Take me to South and 7th Street, please.
South and 7th Street, yeah. South and 7th.
Thanks. Oh, by the way, I want to stop at a pet shop on the way. Do you know a good one nearby?
Well, I don't know where that is. There's one. Oh, yeah, I do know where there's one on the next block, that is.
Well, that's where we're going, then. Oh, driver, are you busy tonight?
Yeah, yeah, I got to drive this cab. Ain't it awful, ain't it?
That's what I mean. That's what I... Now you've got me doing it.
Doing what?
Hiring the cab for tonight.
You mean it?
Sure.
Gee, Santa Claus. I didn't know you without them whiskers. That's a joke. Hey, there's a pet shop, mister. There it is.
Well, that's fine. Thanks. What's your name?
Louis.
Well, come on, Louis. Let's buy a pup.
Buy a pup, huh? Buy a pup, oh boy. Hey, the red one in the window?
Sold, Louis, sold.
Oh, that's a cute pup. That's a cute pup, all right.
How much is the red set of pup in the window?
Oh, that's a very fine animal. $35.
Fine. Wrap it up.
I beg your pardon?
Put it in a cardboard carton with some holes in it. We'll take it with us.
Very good, sir.
Well, now, Louis, you'll take the pup in front, see? It's a surprise for a young lady we'll pick up later. She mustn't know about it.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. Say, but suppose it begins to bark or whine or something?
Well, if she asks what it is, you just tell her a box of books.
Hey, yeah, yeah, that's smart. But wait a minute. What kind of books am I going to say if it starts to bark?
Oh, that's easy. You just call for sneeze.
Believe me, mister, if you didn't want this hack for the evening, I tell you, it sounds a little screwy to me, I tell you.
Hey, here's your dog, sir. Fine animal indeed.
Oh, thanks. Louis, sneeze.
Huh?
Sneeze.
Oh.
Good night.
Thanks.
Great, Louis, great. Take the bunch of books now. We're off to South and 7th Street.
Mother would be very mad if I didn't make these cookies just perfect for Daddy. Let me see. Here it is, Mother's recipe for Christmas cookies. 1 1/4 cups of flour. I've got that. 1 1/2 teaspoons of vanilla. Maybe nobody would notice if there's no vanilla in them. 1/3 cup of sugar. 1 egg. And 1/2 cup of butter. 1/2 cup of butter? I haven't even got half of a 1/2 cup of butter. Oh, I wanted so much to surprise Daddy.
Well, that's no way to feel on Christmas Eve. What's the matter, Janie?
I haven't got hardly any butter.
Well, we'll take care of that in a minute, Janie. But I came here looking for your brother Kingsley.
But I don't know where my brother is because he's looking for my father. And I don't know where my father is. Daddy hasn't been home for 2 whole days.
No, easy, Janie.
Well, Kingsley says Daddy will be home for Christmas.
I'm sure he will.
But now Kingsley's gone. I haven't any butter, and Mother always made such good Christmas cookies.
Well, now look, Janie. I think this will give you all the butter you want and anything else you might need for your Christmas cookies.
Oh, it's $5.
You can't expect me to find your father and Kingsley if you don't have Christmas cookies ready for them when they come home.
Will you really bring them home?
I'll try, Janie. I'll try.
Hey, hey, is this where we picked the young lady up?
Yes, Louis. And don't forget, that's a box of books you have in front and not a dog. And don't forget, if he barks, you sneeze.
Okay, okay.
Well, there's Miss Lane now. Oh, Margot, been waiting long?
Oh, no, Lamont. Whew, I just piled the snow on my best hat so I look like the spirit of Christmas.
Oh, good sight.
Did you deliver your last basket?
Yes. What's that package you have in front, driver?
Oh, I got a... a box of books. I got a box of books.
Oh, well, I thought you'd never get here.
To South and 7th Street, Louis. That's Spike's house, Margot. You wait here, Louis.
Yeah, sure, boss. Sure.
Margot, this is Spike's house.
Let's
go in and see Jenny.
Oh, good. I want to meet her.
No,
Lamont, look. Those two boys are fighting. And that's more boys' fight.
It is. Hey, you youngsters.
Look at all that tree. It's mine.
Stop picking on him, you big bully.
Oh, scram.
Found this tree.
You did not.
Come on, you young hoodlums. Hey, now, wait a minute. One at a time.
I saw it in the gutter.
Listen, young man. I suggest that you run along and let Spike have his tree.
Who's going to make me?
Why, you young rapscallion.
Oh, Lamont, remember, peace on earth.
I'll get you, Spike, when you haven't got your gang with you.
What a piece of the society column. The well-known clubman, Lamont Cranston, seen brawling. Ow! He hit me with a snowball.
Remember, Margo, peace on earth.
Well, if you were half a man, you'd do something about it.
Never let it be said.
Well, here, you're not going to throw a snowball at him.
It wouldn't look well if I shot him, would it?
Boy, what a way.
Ouch! Hey, who do you think you are, Lefty Gomez or something? I'll get you, Spike.
Mister, and it isn't even a good Christmas tree.
Oh, Spike, it's a beautiful tree.
It hasn't got many needles. But you got to have a Christmas tree when you got a girl in the house.
You're right, Kingsley.
Kingsley, have you been talking to my sister?
Yes.
Nothing's happened to my dad yet, has it?
Why, of course not. We know your dad's missing, so we just came down to help.
Have you any idea where your father is, Spike?
Oh, gee. He'll show up.
Have you been to the place where he works?
I mean, where he used to work. That old skinflint Mr. Jordan won't let him work there anymore.
I see. Have you asked the police for help?
Well, that's just the trouble, Mr. Cranston. I can't.
Why not, Spike?
Oh, it's kind of private.
Well, here, you must tell us or we won't be able to help you.
Well, all right. See, I went there yesterday and Mr. Jordan said he hadn't seen Dad. And when he did, he was going to have him thrown in jail.
What?
Yeah. Mr. Jordan said my dad did something to the books or something. And that he was a thief. My dad wouldn't do anything like that.
I'm sure he wouldn't, Spike.
Bet he wouldn't. Especially because that business really belongs to him. And it's supposed to belong to me someday when I get big. If anybody's a thief, it's that old skinflint Mr. Jordan.
Now, look, Spike. The first thing we've got to do is to find your father.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to get the police to help us.
Oh, but maybe they'll arrest him.
But you and I both know that your dad didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe they can find him, huh? Maybe they can find him.
Sure they can. You tell me what he looks like. Then you and Miss Lane go in the house, and I'll go to police headquarters.
Good evening, Sergeant Murphy.
Well, well. Season's greetings to you, Mr. Cranston.
Same to you. Sergeant, Kingsley Grover Sr. has been missing for 2 days.
Tell me what he looks like and we'll start looking.
His son Spike told me that he was 5'10", weighed about 165, was wearing brown overalls.
Calling all cars, calling all cars. Missing since last Friday. Kingsley Grover Sr., height 5 feet.
Harbor Patrol.
This is headquarters. We're looking for Kingsley Grover Sr., height 5'10". Wait.
Pity Morgue.
Hello, Cheerful. Headquarters calling. Merry Christmas. Have you got a stiff on ice about 5'10"? Wait.
Did you find out anything about Spike's old man at police headquarters?
No, not yet. Miss Lane's still in the house?
Yeah, she's there with Spike and his sister. Say, the dog's all right. I didn't have to sneeze or nothing. He was so quiet, I thought he was froze or something. So put my hand inside the box. You know what happened?
No.
He bit my finger. He's a card, all right. He's a card.
Keep up the good work, Louie. I'm going in the house.
Okay, boss, okay. Hello, everybody.
Long time, Mr. Cranston. The police find him?
They'll get him soon, Spike. Don't be impatient now.
No, I won't be impatient. Say, would it be bad if you and Miss Lane went into the other room for a minute? I want to talk to my sister. Do you mind?
No, of course not, Spike. Come on with me, Lamont.
It'll only be a second.
Take your time, Spike.
Look at Janie. We'll find him in time for Christmas.
And still the search for Spike's father goes on. The machine of the police looking everywhere. Hours pass, and no word. Now we find Kingsley going up to old Mr. Jordan's office.
Mr. Jordan!
Who is it?
Oh, it's you, is it? Get out of here.
Please tell me where my father is.
I don't know where that thieving father of yours is. If I did...
He's not a thief. If anybody's a thief, you are.
You shut your lying, dirty mouth.
You stole my father's business. He should be here, not you.
I'll flash you within an inch of your life, you little gutter snipe. Take that.
Please don't hit me with that chain again, please.
You don't like that,
please.
Eh? And that.
Oh, please stop it.
Go on, get out. Get out.
Kid, how did you get that red welt across your cheek?
Mr. Jordan hit me with his cane.
Oh, you poor child. Come here, I'll wash it out.
Now we have to plan what we're going to do. Have you any suggestions, Spike?
Only one, Mr. Cranston.
What's that?
Well, it sounds kind of silly, maybe even to try it, but you see, Dad and I, we always used to walk up the avenue on Christmas Eve.
Oh, it stings a little, doesn't it?
It's all right. Well, anyway, we'd look in the store windows and we'd see what we'd buy for ourselves and Janie and Mother when she was alive. We had all the money we wanted. I thought I'd walk up the avenue tonight and... Well, I guess it sounds kind of silly, but I would like to.
That's a wonderful idea, Kingsley. And Margot.
Yes, Lamont.
Why don't you go along and take a pencil and paper and write down all the things Spike would like for himself and his sister?
We never did that.
No? Well, just think what fun you'd have. Take talking it over with Janie afterwards if you had a list.
Gee, that's right. Let's go. Oh, and you know, we might even run into Dad.
Well, sure you might.
Aren't you coming with us, Mr. Cranston?
Well, yes, of course. I'll join you on the avenue. But first, I want to get to police station again and check up.
Oh, Janie.
Yes, Kingsley?
You better stay here and watch those cookies don't burn again.
All right.
I'll be with you in a little while.
Close the books for the night. I've had a good year. Who's there? No one. I guess I'll give myself a Christmas present of a new latch for the door. That Grover brat must have left it open. He's too smart, that boy. You don't have to worry about any Grovers ever again, Simon Jordan. Simon Jordan. That's going to look fine in new gilt letters on the door. Instead of Grover's important company. You're pretty slick, Simon Jordan. These books are fixed so cleverly that even the Supreme Court couldn't tell that Simon Jordan didn't own this company. Hey, what was that? Who said that?
No one said anything, Simon Jordan. I was just enjoying your joke with you.
Where are you? I can hear your voice.
Of course you can hear my voice, Simon Jordan. But you can't see me. I'm in the shadows. The shadows of your mind.
Go away. Go away from me.
I thought you might be lonely.
No, I'm not. Go on. Go away.
I came to ask you about the Grovers.
Hey? What do you know about the Grovers?
Enough, Simon Jordan. Enough to know that your altered books would not fool the Supreme Court.
Hey? You're not a spirit, are you?
In a sense, yes. I try to represent the spirit of honesty and justice. And when Simon Jordan beats a child with his cane, steals from the father of that child like a low, sneaking thief, then I must talk to Simon Jordan.
I'm not a thief.
No. I should not disgrace thieves by calling you one of them.
Hey?
You're a man too mean to be a thief, Jordan.
Yeah.
What do you want from this world?
None of your business what I want.
I'll tell you. You want money. Nothing but money. I feel sorry for you, Simon.
Oh.
I'm going to go now. But I want to leave one thought with you.
Eh?
You're an old man. You don't have much longer to live.
What?
All your life's work is your money. It's rather an empty victory, isn't it? You're alone in the world. Your money doesn't do anyone any good, Simon Jordan.
Eh?
But you can rest easy in your shriveled soul because the Growers will be taken care of. The Shadow will take care of them.
The Shadow?
There they are, Louie. Stop here. Margot, Spike. Hello.
Hello there, Lamont. gone.
Oh, I thought I'd never pick you up.
Well, we're beginning to worry, too.
How are things down at the police station?
Well, not much news yet, Spike. But they've got a couple of leads that might amount to something.
That's good.
Are you pretty near the end of your Christmas Eve walk, Spike?
We've got one more stop. Pop and me always stopped in here at the cathedral, you know, just to get out of the cold for a minute. You don't have to be afraid. They'll let you in.
If you take us, they will, Spike.
Up these steps.
Come on, I didn't know there were as many windows in town. I'm dead. I've got a list of presents as long as... Oh, your arm.
Don't slip, Miss Lane.
I hope you've got a preferred list.
Oh, I have.
Here, in here. Why, this door is heavy. We can stand back here and listen.
All right, Spike.
Look, Lamont, that poor man over in the corner.
Yes.
Mr. Cranston, it's my dad.
What?
It's my dad. Daddy. Dad, speak to me. Speak to me. He won't speak to me.
Mr. Grover. Mr. Grover, this is your son. Don't you know him?
Dad.
I can't remember.
Margo, this man has been hurt.
Let's get him outside, Lamont.
Do you remember your name, sir?
Gee, there's something wrong with him.
My name?
You must try to remember.
Truck. Skidding. Hit me.
Why did you come to the cathedral tonight?
It's Christmas Eve. Always come here.
Who is we?
I can't remember.
Emily, Miss Lane leave some packages with you?
Did she leave some packages? Did she leave some? She dumped them in the back of the hack and went to the kids. Spike, was talking all the way down about you found his old man. Is that the kid's old man with you?
Yes, he's in pretty good shape now.
Oh, gee, that's the nuts. That certainly is.
Now, Louie, don't forget to bring in those packages when I call you. All right now, Mr. Grover. Just lean on me. You're still a little bit shaky.
I know it.
Now, watch the step.
I'm all right, thank you.
Yeah, you're fine now. All right. You go first.
Merry Christmas, children.
Daddy! Oh!
How is the lady of the house?
Just wonderful now that you're here. Oh, Daddy. And I make Christmas cookies, too.
Fine, fine. And how about you, young man? How have you been behaving?
I've been getting along all right.
Hey, where did you get that nasty welt across your cheek? You haven't been in a fight, have you, son?
Oh, I'll go.
Oh, no, sir. It was only an accident.
What's Mr. Jordan, Martin? What are you doing here?
I came to speak on a matter of business.
I don't believe this is the occasion for a business discussion.
Oh, I think it is, Mr. Grover. In going over the books tonight, I found that a great and terrible mistake has been made.
Huh?
The Grover Importing Company has been making more money than I thought. And over half of it is rightfully yours as partner in the company.
Partner?
Yes, part owner. And I hope you'll find it within your heart to forget any misunderstandings we may have had and that you'll take over the responsibilities of partnership immediately. Yes. Yes, that's all I've got to say. Good night, and Merry Christmas to you all.
Oh, how can such an awful old man say such beautiful things?
Well, we haven't time to talk about whether he's awful or not. We have things to do. Louie!
Oh, you don't have to yell. You don't have to yell. I'm right here. I got all the stuff right with me.
Good. Bring it right in.
Look, presents. Are they flowers?
Quiet, Janie. Of course they're not.
But they are, Kingsley.
Oh, don't kid me, Mr. Cranston.
You're not getting fined.
I don't know how I can ever repay you for what you, Miss Lane, and Mr. Cranston have done tonight.
We've been more than repaid, I assure you. Louie, don't bring that in here. I didn't tell you I wanted you to bring that in.
It was my own idea, and I'm not even going to have to sneeze. Oh, I dropped.
Oh, Lamont, you're a darling. Did you get that puppy?
Well, yes.
Gee, is that for us, too?
Why, oh, of course, Spike. Mr. Cranston got that for you as a surprise.
Margot, hear ye. It's about time for all three of you, and that means you too, Mr. Grover, to sit down and open some packages. We've got to go. You ready, Margot? Where's Louie?
He went outside.
Merry Christmas to you all, and to you all, good night.
Merry Christmas.
Well, Margot, earlier tonight, we disagreed on our interpretation of charity. Silly, wasn't it?
I know what you mean, Lamont.
There should never be a thing called charity. There should never have been the necessity to create the word. In this short span we call our lives, if each man would only realize that every other man has dreams and hopes,
this world wouldn't be a topsy-turvy place. Then peace on Earth would be a fact. Goodwill would be for every man.
Oh! Is that you, Louis?
Oh, me? Yeah, Mr. Cranston.
Have you got a cold?
A box of books.
Box of books? But you brought that inside.
Yeah, but this is another one.
Another one?
Yeah, another one. It's for you, Miss Lane.
Do you mean it's another puppy?
Yeah, it's my own idea. You see, when I went by the pet shop, and the other pup's brother was in the window, so I went in and I pet him on the head. Do you know what he done, Mr. Cranston?
No.
He bit my finger. Oh, he's a god. So I had to go and get him for Miss Lane. And I charged him to you, I did.
Aunt?
Yes, Margo?
I'd like to say something.
Why, certainly. What do you want to say?
Merry Christmas to everybody.
Thank you, Margo and Lamont. Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow Magazine. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. The Shadow Magazine is on sale at your local newsstand.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Oh, I definitely love a beautiful ending, especially at Christmas time. You just heard the Shadow episode, Stockings Were Hung, which was first heard on Christmas Eve 1939 on the Mutual Radio Network. The Shadow character originated in pulp novels and the Shadow magazine, which was published in the 1930s and 40s. Next up, we have a Christmas episode from The Whistler, a thriller series which ran from May 16, 1942 to September 3, 1955 on CBS. Since the series' primary sponsor, Signal Oil, operated only on the west coast of the U.S., the series did not air in Eastern America except for a short stint from 1946 to 1948 when CBS found a couple of East Coast sponsors for the series. The series starred Bill Foreman as the Whistler. Today's episode is titled Delayed Christmas Present and was first heard the evening of Sunday, December 16, 1948. Enjoy.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's now time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler, rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. And here's an important announcement for Whistler fans in California only. Beginning next Sunday, January 2nd, due to California's going off daylight saving time, the Whistler will be heard in California only 1 hour earlier, from 8:30 until 9. Remember the change in time. In California only, the Whistler will be heard at a new time, from 8:30 till 9. In other states, the Whistler will be heard at the same time as always. And now the Whistler's strange story. Delayed Christmas Present.
Christmas was really over, for it was 1 o'clock in the morning at Pete's Cantina, a tough little night spot on the outskirts of Panama City. But the melody lingered on. You could hear the chimes of the big church a block away playing Adeste Fidelis. There was practically no business. Four hostesses, all Americans, were sitting drearily at the far end of the ballroom near the bar. One of them, Mary Winslow, billed as Candy Porter, just sat gazing drearily into space, thinking bitterly of a past from which for a while there had seemed no escape. But for 5 months now, she'd been relatively safe. No one had been around asking any questions. As Candy Porter, blues singer, Mary Winslow had found a kind of security, not a happy security, for she was far away from home. And as the chimes became silent, Mary wondered if it was worthwhile. A reverie was broken up as she looked up and saw Spanish Pete, a fat, greedy owner of the cantina, approaching her table.
Candy, look, there's an American gentleman just came in. He wants to buy you some champagne. Champagne,
oh,
you hear
please,
that?
Please, Pete, not tonight. It's Christmas. I'd rather be alone if you don't mind.
I do mind. Look.
All right. Let him spend his money on champagne.
Now you're smart, baby. Here he comes.
You turn and see the tall, heavy-set American approach. Suddenly you become tense. You recognize the type, don't you? After a year of running away, you've learned to spot his kind in a moment. You fight to remain calm as he reaches your table.
Sit down, Mr. Fontaine. Sit down.
Sure you don't mind, Miss Porter?
Of course not.
Thanks. In that case, I guess I will.
I'll go get the champagne. I keep him on ice. 11 years old, too.
Cigarette, Mr. Fontaine?
No, thanks.
He don't mind if I do.
Of course not. Light?
Thanks.
Strange, spending Christmas so far away from home.
Mm-hmm. How come?
Business. Important business.
Couldn't it wait?
No. This business means a lot to the people I work for.
Oh, well, here's what you say, bubble water. From Marseille, 13 years old.
You said 11.
That was from Le Havre. This is even better. Now I put him back in the ice. You want some more? You just call Pete. I got another one on ice, just like him.
Well, I guess it's kind of late to wish you a Merry Christmas, Miss Porter. So I guess I'd better just say season's greetings. Anyway, here's luck.
Here's hoping you find whatever you came here after.
I've already found what I came after.
I'm glad.
I hope you will be.
Why shouldn't I be?
Because I came after you, Mary Winslow.
With the prologue of Delayed Christmas Present, the Signal Oil Company brings you another strange story by The Whistler. But now, since this is Christmas weekend, I want to thank you for inviting us of the Whistler cast into your home on this special occasion. During the 6 consecutive years that the Whistler has been broadcast by Signal Oil Company, many of us have had the pleasure of celebrating Christmas with many of you a number of times. And believe me, we feel it a real honor that you consider us a part of your entertainment family. Tonight, on behalf of Signal Oil Company and the independent Signal dealers who serve the states of California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Nevada, and Arizona, I want to say, we hope that your Christmas has been a merry one. May your new year be filled with peace, prosperity, and the good health with which to enjoy these blessings. And now back to the Whistler.
After a year, it doesn't seem fair, does it, Mary Winslow? After a year of hiding, using one name and then another. After 5 bitter months of singing at Pete's Cantina as Candy Porter, blues singer, this man Fontaine has come to take you back to the States to face the consequences of one horrible night. You're sure he's a detective. He couldn't be anything else. You can't run again. There's no place you could go. You've only one card left. And as you face the man across the table and listen to his even, level voice, you decide to play it. If you play it carefully, it might be an ace.
I think you know why I'm here. We're leaving in the morning for Los Angeles, Miss Winslow.
Like the billing says, my name is Candy Porter.
I know what the billing says. I know what it said in Brooklyn when you were billed as Doris Trent, in Denver when you were billed as Gladys James. But when you first took a powder out of Los Angeles, you were Mary Winslow.
You know, It's almost funny you should call me Mary Winslow. We used to work together, her and me, in the same floor show. We could have been billed as twin sisters. The customers used to mistake us for each other, too.
Now, look, Miss Winslow, let's quit kidding.
I'm not kidding. A lot of other people made the same mistake you had. And like I said, I knew Mary Winslow intimately. I think I could help you solve your case if you let me tell you about her.
Sure. Go ahead, if it'll make you feel any better.
Thanks. You see, Mary Winslow was really just a good kid that got a bad break. In love with a swell guy and scared to death of a hoodlum. She told me all about it. It's quite a story.
I'll bet it is.
Yes, it was quite a story, wasn't it, Mary? And it all began a year ago Christmas Eve at the Christmas party given by your employers in the pink room of the Swank Wilchester Hotel. You really enjoyed yourself that night, didn't you? And you were quite the hit of the evening. You sang three numbers and went over big. Your fellow workers didn't know your many talents. Everyone told you what a fine singer you were. And when you left, you were feeling good. So good, you decided to drop into the cocktail lounge, make a phone call, and have a nightcap before going home.
Scotch and soda, mix it.
Make mine the same, Bill.
Gotcha.
I heard you sing tonight. You were terrific.
Thanks.
What's the matter? Did he stand you up?
Who?
The guy you were just talking to on the phone. No, I guess he didn't stand you.
Didn't he?
And he's on his way here right now. Yep, that's the answer. Lucky guy.
Hey, out, folks.
Now, let's take it out of here, Bill.
Now, look here, mister.
Oh, take it easy. It's practically Christmas. What's the harm of my buying you one drink? Like I said, I like your voice, Miss Winslow.
Here's your change.
Oh, thanks, Bill.
You must be a detective. You know my name and everything.
No, not everything. But it wasn't any trick to find out your name. I just asked one of the boys if I could dance with. My name's Joe Clark. Oh, I see you've never heard of me.
Should I have?
A lot of people have. Most of the boys and girls around the night spots know me.
Well, then that accounts for my ignorance. You see, I seldom haunt the night spots.
Well, you should. With a voice like yours, you could be packing them in a good nightclub.
Oh, now I get it. You're a professional talent scout, and you want to get me into the movies.
No. I'm a gambler. Shock you?
Well, I should have. Live and let live is my motto. And that's exactly what I'm going to do right now.
Huh?
Live my life and let you live yours. Good night, Mr. Clark. My. Just think, tomorrow I can tell all the girls at the office I met a real live gambler.
You could tell them all a lot more than that if you believed in your voice as much as I do.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You've heard of Dominguez on Sunset, out near the ocean?
It's an undercover gambling club, isn't it?
More than a gambling club. It's a swell floor show. A lot of big people go out there, people that count.
And they're all intimate friends of yours, I'm sure.
Not all, but I know quite a few. Could push you right to the top with that voice.
Oh, that's the oldest line I've ever heard.
It's not a line. Yeah, but skip it. Go on home. Listen to the radio. Eat candy. You can have a terrific time. You go to Domingo's with me, you can't tell what might happen. You might have to meet a couple of show producers. So play it safe and go home. It may be dull, but you'll always get to work on time.
Is that all you have to say?
That's all. Nighty-night.
Wait a minute.
Yeah?
Could we be back fairly early?
Leave anytime you say.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Well, now you're making sense. I'll call a cab.
Never mind. I have a car. It's parked right around the corner.
Clark used just the right approach, didn't he, Mary? You realize you're being a fool. But as the hours pass, you tell yourself your fears are groundless. Joe treats you with perfect courtesy. You watch the gambling for a while, then proceed to the silver room and enjoy the floor show. Afterwards, you have a little food and watch the dancers.
Mm-hmm.
suddenly you've had enough.
Joe, do you mind if we leave now?
I said we'd leave any time you said. What hit you? The music?
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Another guy?
Another guy. My fiancé.
What happened to him?
He's in the Philippines. Research.
Oh. Dennis?
Doctor. Dr. Frank Wilson, M.D. That was his car we drove out here in. He told me to keep it warm for him.
Well, too bad. We could have had a lot of fun. Well, shall we go?
Was it just the song, Mary? Or was it that uneasy feeling you have about Joe that made you want to leave so suddenly? It must have been the song. For as you're ready to leave the club grounds, Joe is still a considerate escort.
Well, hop in. Oh, unless you want me to drive.
I'll drive, unless you mind too much.
No, I don't mind. Probably be safer, too.
For several miles, Joe says little, seems preoccupied. And you feel relieved when he breaks his rather strange silence.
Oh, say, Mary, would you mind stopping for a minute at that drive-in? All of a sudden, I'm having an awful headache. Maybe I can get some aspirin.
I doubt it, but we'll give it a try.
You can keep the motor running while I'm gone. I'll only be gone a few seconds.
Okay. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Joe!
Get going.
Joe, you shot him.
I said get going fast. There's a gun in your ribs, baby. You just saw what happened to one guy that crossed me.
Is he dead?
I don't know.
Oh, you. Oh, why was I such a fool?
Turn right at the next corner. The car's been tailing us for the last couple.
I'm glad. I hope it's a prowl car. It saved me the trouble of phoning the police.
He didn't turn, baby. You shouldn't have said what you did about phoning the cops. You better pull over and park. We got a couple of things to talk over. I said pull over. Yeah, that's better.
Please, Joe, don't kill me. I know you can do it easy, but I'll never talk about tonight.
That's the way you feel now. An hour from now, you'll feel...
No, I won't. On my word of honor, I'm making a deal with you, Joe. I'm trading you my silence for my life. I swear I won't talk about it ever.
Okay, I'll take a chance. You drove the getaway car, so we're partners now anyway. We're going to have a lot of fun together, you and me. Now, how about dropping me off at my place?
Tell me where to go.
I live about 6
minutes. After you drop Joe and you reach your apartment, you're so weak you can hardly stand. Your senses are reeling, your brain is spinning. You practically fall into bed. You try to snatch a little sleep, but sleep is impossible. Finally, at 6 o'clock in the morning, the newspaper is shoved under your apartment door. The headlines sicken you.
Drive-in operator shot and hold-up dies.
The subheadings are even worse.
Unidentified man and woman seen fleeing from scene of crime in dark green 47 model Chevrolet. Pedestrian believes he can identify both car and woman.
There it is, Mary. Hopeless, isn't it? Even if you called the police, your story would sound phony now. It's closing in on you, isn't it, Mary? Yet, frightened as you are, you're certain of two things. That you're not going to become further involved with Joe Clark. And you won't allow any unfavorable publicity to fall on your absent fiancé, Dr. Frank Wilson. You were foolish to risk a life of happiness with him, weren't you? For a few moments of excitement with a gambler, a murderer like Joe Clark. But you decide there's only one thing you can do, Mary. Leave town, disappear, and never see Clark again. You dress hurriedly, packing only a few belongings, and then spend Christmas Day and night at the home of a girlfriend. The next morning, you're on an eastbound plane. 3 months later, you're singing in the Golden Lion, a prosperous little nightclub in Brooklyn, New York, where you become a featured performer under the name of Doris Trent. You're a great success under your new name. And then one night you have a visitor. You're sure it's Mr. Vern Shields, London musical comedy producer.
Come in.
Well, well, what do you know? Long time no see, Miss Trent. Doris Trent, it says on the program.
All right, Joe, now that you've found me, what's on your mind?
You double-crossed me, baby.
You're crazy. That's why I left town, so I wouldn't have to talk to anybody.
But you could still write, couldn't you?
I don't get you.
That anonymous note to the police, written just after you left, telling all about that driving job. Gave the exact time, my name, where I lived, what I had on, everything. But not a word about the girl with me. Funny, huh? You're the only one that knew all of that, baby.
Oh, no, Joe, you're wrong. Believe me, I didn't write any notes.
Couldn't have been anyone else. 2 days after you left, they picked me up for questions.
Anybody could have written a note like that. Well, one of your enemies might have wanted you out of circulation and tried to frame you.
Yeah, maybe, but I doubt it.
Joe, I didn't write it. I've kept my bargain with you 100%.
There's one way you can convince me.
How?
Marry me tonight.
Marry you?
Yeah. That way I'll be sure of you. Wives don't testify against their husbands. Besides, I'll know what you're doing all the time.
Oh, Joe, I got to go to my show. Let's talk this over
tonight or else. You can run up to Connecticut. But go ahead, do your show. And if you've got any ideas about calling in the cops, don't forget, you drove the getaway car. And in case anything serious should happen to me, there's a written confession in my pocket telling exactly how you helped me pull the job. How we used your boyfriend's car. How you kept the motor on waiting for me. Your doctor would love reading about that, wouldn't he?
No. No, he wouldn't.
And don't get funny. Go ahead and on to your show. I'll wait for you here.
You start down the hallway toward the powder room off stage. Suddenly you realize what a fool you've been. But you're not going to keep on being a fool, are you, Mary? Not with that wall telephone just 5 steps ahead of you.
Operator. Oh, operator. Get me police headquarters.
Better
quick.
Hang up quick, babe, and I mean quick. You should have looked around before you called. I had a hunch you'd try to double-cross me. Now I know for sure who wrote that note to the cops.
Oh, I didn't, Joe.
You just tried to call him, didn't you? All of a sudden, I've lost interest in getting married. We're just going for a little ride. Come on, babe, start walking.
No, Joe. I'm not moving a foot, not an inch. If I have to be shot, I'll take it right here. Let go of my arm.
Hey, what's going on here? Something wrong, Doris? This guy bothering you?
Yes, he is. He wants to date me. Tell him to leave, will you, Eddie?
Maybe I'd better take him into the office and call the cops.
No. No. Thanks, Eddie. There's no need for that. He's just another wolf. Tell him to leave. That's good enough.
You heard what the lady said, bud. Start traveling.
Okay, chum. Anything you say. I'll see the lady later. We parked right across the street, Miss Trent.
You should have let me call the cops.
I would have if he hadn't had you covered with his gun.
Oh? Thanks, kid.
Eddie, I gotta get out of town fast.
After what you just did for me, that's a cinch. Grab some clothes while I phone my wife I'm bringing you home. We'll go out the rear entrance. My car's on the lot next door. Tomorrow I'll call a friend of mine in Denver. He'll put you to work right away. You better change your name, though.
That'll be easy. I'm getting used to it. That's where I met Mary Winslow, in Denver at the Hi-Hat Club. Builder's Gladys James. She roomed with me about 2 months, and then she She left, just like that, one night when a waiter told her some guy wanted to interview her for a magazine. That's the last I ever saw of her.
That's the end of the story?
That's the end.
And Mary Winslow told you all this?
Well, we were very close friends.
Well, so you were. You expect me to believe that?
It's true, every word of it.
You know something? You ought to be writing stories for the movies. The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. Now that Christmas shopping is out of the way for another year, most of us are figuring ways to get our badly stretched budgets back into shape, which makes now a mighty appropriate time to talk about Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline. Mileage, of course, is only one of the reasons that folks who insist on getting the most from each gasoline dollar choose Signal. In addition, they like the superior performance that goes hand in hand with mileage. You see, the only way today's Signal gasoline can give you such good mileage is by helping your motor run more efficiently. And when your motor runs more efficiently, you also enjoy quicker starting, faster pickup, smoother power, the things that make driving more pleasure. So, among your resolutions for the new year, how about resolving to put Signal gasoline to the test in your car? See for yourself why drivers who insist on quality, as well as those with an eye for economy, are both switching to Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline. And now back to the Whistler.
Well, Mary, it looks as though you've lost, doesn't it? That your one card wasn't enough. The man across the table, the man you're sure is a detective, who has come to take you back to Los Angeles to stand trial for a holdup and murder you had nothing to do with, doesn't believe you, does he? And the jury in Los Angeles won't believe you either. Yes, Mary, it looks as though you've lost, but you're going to play the game to the end anyway. And as the piano player across the floor plays the tune he's played 1,000 times in the last 2 weeks, you quietly watch Fontaine and await his next word.
How long did you say you've been here?
I didn't say. I got here about 5 months ago.
Like it here?
No.
That's what I figured. Look,
a
Miss...
Cigarette?
Thanks.
Light?
Mm-hmm. Thanks again, Miss Porter.
Did you say Miss Porter?
That's what you said your name was, didn't you? That's what the billing says, too, isn't it?
Oh, thanks, Mr. Fontaine. Thanks for believing me.
There's just one thing I'd like to ask you, Miss.
Ask me anything.
Knowing Miss Winslow as well as you do, do you think she might come back to Los Angeles sometime and sort of clear things up?
I think she might. Someday. You see, a girl like Mary Winslow gets to feel kind of soiled after working around in joints like this. She'd probably want to spend a little time maybe out in the desert in the sunshine. Sort of freshening up before anybody she cared about.
Yeah. Maybe she would. Well, this was a pretty long trip for nothing, you know, sir. Just one more bum steer. But I'm glad it came. I always figured that confession we found on Joe Clark was a phony.
Clark? Is Joe Clark in jail?
He's dead. The Brooklyn police got him one night about 5 months ago. Anyhow, they got the tip. A woman called the police one night from a little nightclub, the Golden Lion Club. She hung up before they answered the phone, but the Brooklyn boys decided to investigate anyway. One of them spotted Clark parking the car across the street, and he got trigger happy. How was that?
Joe Clark. finished.
Well, Miss Porter, if you ever run into Mary Winslow...
I'll tell her all about the Christmas present I got from a swell cop named Fontaine.
I'm not a cop, Miss Porter.
You're not? Then who are you?
I'm a private investigator working for a guy named Wilson. Dr. Frank Wilson.
Frank Wilson?
That's right. He's in love with Mary Winslow. Doesn't care where she's been. Just wants her to come back and marry him. Well, so long, Miss Porter, and Happy New Year.
Mr. Fontaine.
Yes?
Do you think you could arrange for me to go back to the States with you?
I guess I could. I was figuring on taking one lady back. Are you going on through to Los Angeles?
Not for a while. I'd kind of like to spend a little time in the country somewhere. But I think maybe before next Christmas. Well, I think I'll find Mary Winslow again.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. Now let me repeat an important announcement for Whistler fans in California only. Beginning next Sunday, January 2nd, due to California's going off daylight saving time, The Whistler will be heard in California only 1 hour earlier from 8:30 until 9. Remember the change in time. In California only, The Whistler will be heard at a new time from 8:30 till 9. In other states, The Whistler will be heard at the same time as always. Featured in tonight's story were Joan Banks and Jack Petruzzi. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen and directed by Gordon Hughes, with story by Edward Bloodworth and music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is Marvin Miller speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, once again, we have a happy ending, and everything worked out for Candy Porter in the end. You're listening to the Whistler episode, Delayed Christmas Present, from Box of Day of 1948, the series broadcast by CBS Radio. I'm afraid our time together is almost up, but hope you'll join me next week as we celebrate the end of the year. I welcome your thoughts on today's program. You may email me at corey@cfisfm.com, that's C-O-R-E-Y, or write me at Old Parlor Radio, 2080 15th Avenue, Prince George, BC, Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFIS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a very Merry Christmas. ¶¶